The Outer Rim. The Final Frontier. These are the news stories of the Outer Rim. To explore strange new fandoms. To seek out new life and new science fiction. To boldly go where no fan has gone before.
Not good.
Blast!
Look, don't worry. Everything's gonna be fine. Trust me.
That's just great.
Now, discussing the news on the edge of fandom.
Set your hyperdrive motivator for full throttle.
Chewie, get us out of here!
We're headed to the Outer Rim.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Outer Rim. This is episode number 38. I finally got my numbering down, I think, so we're good to go there. With me tonight is my normal co-host, Eric. Eric, how are you tonight?
Normal? I think that's the nicest thing anybody said about me today. That's
just,
very cool.
Just today, or was that like for the year?
Well, probably the year now that I think about it. Gee, thanks.
Sorry. Well, so my usual co-host, as well as my unusual co-host I have on some shows.
Yes, I'm very usual. I am not at all unusual.
I hope you're having a good week. We've had some good entertainment stuff this week going on.
Yeah.
And, we are excited about a lot of things, actually. In fact, you know, not even in the show notes, but just today I saw a email I got from Disney Cruise Lines news that they are doing 15 Star Wars Day at Sea cruises next year.
Wow.
As opposed to the 8 they had this past year or this year. And when I was on the cruise, they actually didn't know they were going to do any more. In fact, we asked a couple times and they're like, no, they really didn't have any plans. They didn't say anything about that. Well, we're hoping they do, but they didn't have any plans to. And I was like, boy, that's a awful lot of setup for just 8 cruises and that's it. But yeah, so 15 next year. They're doing, I guess, the week-long Western Caribbean cruise and I think the 4-day-long Eastern Caribbean cruise.
Nice. Well,
each one of those will get a one single day Star Wars Day at Sea. So
we'll have to maybe check into setting something up. Of course, what's really going to be difficult is that for the diehard Star Wars fans who might consider doing that as kind of a Star Wars thing, you've got, like, in that same general time of the year, you've also got Celebration.
Yeah, it's true.
So that's going to be kind of expensive.
Yeah, my money might be for Celebration next year instead of a cruise. But
yeah,
nice to see they're doing it again. I'm glad they are doing that. And
absolutely.
That's nice to see.
Yeah.
So before we get into the other news we had this week, what have you been up to personally for the last week or so?
I was going to save some of it for random chatter, but I guess we're probably going to have a really, really long episode of random chatter this week. Episode 102 is going to be our spring movie preview episode, so might as well talk about it here.
Sure.
I finished Mr. Robot.
Oh, okay, what'd you think?
It's funny because, and see, I don't want to say too much because there are some spoilers that I think some people who want to go back and binge watch it, I don't want to say too much, but I was right about some things in ways that I didn't realize I would be right.
Okay.
Some of the casual comments I made early on in the season about my thoughts on the show were more, what's the word? Precognizant?
Yeah, okay.
They were more prophetic than I had expected them to be. And you were right. When you said, yeah, it's kind of weird, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of weird. And then at the end, I'm like, whoa, this is what Lou meant.
I mean, good weird, but weird.
Yeah. No, I loved it. It was... the last episode was... maybe not quite how I would have... ended, not so much how I would have ended it as much as where I would have ended it, but wow.
Yeah, you know, I think I want to go back and watch them all again before season two, but it was, to me, it was a hard series to watch. It never really brought me into the point where, oh, I can't wait for the next episode. It was, you know, a little bit of treachery getting through it, I thought, but it was good. Just not riveting to the point where, oh, I can't wait for the next episode, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm a little worried about watching it again, but the acting was superb. I thought the characters were great. Just very strange.
Now, see, I want to watch it again because it's one of those shows where when you watch it the second time, you're going to pick up on new things.
Yeah, I hope so.
And I love movies or shows that do that, of any style of movie or television show out there, anything where it's different on the second viewing, that's automatically my favorite type of fiction.
Okay. This is one of those things where it's also going to be knowing where it's going at the end. You'll be watching those episodes differently than you would did the first time around.
Exactly.
You know, not knowing where it's going. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Breaking news. This just in, literally, from Variety. This came in like 8 seconds ago on Twitter. Kiefer Sutherland announces debut album and tour.
Huh?
Kiefer Sutherland from 24.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of music is he doing?
Clicking on the link now. This is from Variety.
Oh, boy.
Let's see. It's the closest thing I've ever had to a journal or diary, Sutherland says. All of these songs are pulled from my own personal experiences. Yeah. I don't know. 26-city tour, which begins on April 14th. Sutherland's 11-track album, Down in a Hole, is described as folk-tinged.
Kiefer Sutherland is releasing a folk album. Yeah, I just see the news here now. Wow.
Yeah, never mind. So back
Sutherland's
to the show.
New country band will rock Asbury Park. Oh my God, this just gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
Oh. Joel in the chat room. If any of our listeners go to see him, let us know how that is.
Well, Joel in the chat room says he's Canadian. I'm guessing he's playing Toronto.
There you go.
He probably is. Of all of the reasons I may eventually go back to Toronto and visit, which I would love to do, I don't think that Kiefer Sutherland is going to be what pulls me back there.
Let's see.
Just saying.
Tour dates are Milwaukee, Madison, Grand Rapids, Ann Arbor, which really hit Michigan hard, Wisconsin, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Huntington, West Virginia. That doesn't seem like a very... Really? Cincinnati, Ohio, Indianapolis, Columbus, Charlotte, Raleigh, Richmond, Annapolis.
Huh.
He's not coming to Connecticut, unfortunately. He's coming to Providence. That's close. We'll get to we'll see him in Providence.
Okay. I don't know. The parking down there is not great.
Maybe we shouldn't do that. Yeah. Interesting. Well,
anyway, sorry about that. That's what I get for having Twitter open while I podcast. I've actually been... So that's what I've been doing in the last week. I've been using Twitter.
You have been on Twitter, yes.
Yeah, for like 3 days straight now. It's weird.
It's nice to see you on social media.
I feel creepy. I feel like a stalker. It's like I'm seeing all of this stuff about people's personal lives that's completely meaningless and it doesn't matter at all.
But it's stuff they're sharing with you.
Yeah, but they're not sharing it with me. They're sharing it with the void. That's my thing about Twitter. It's like, I'll never forget the one time that we went out to dinner with three other couples that we're really close friends with. We hadn't seen in a long time. And they all start these conversations. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. When did that happen? And they all look at me like, well, don't you read Facebook? And I'm like, no, I expect my friends to actually talk to me, not talk out into the void in hopes that I will trip across it someday. I mean, talk to me.
Yeah, but, you know, Facebook is more about groups and sharing with groups. And in Twitter is more about yelling into a hallway. You know, it's like, hey, I'm doing this.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, a lot of the people I follow on Twitter and interact with are actually pretty interactive. A lot of the Star Wars community.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, anytime someone mentions me on Twitter, like if they respond to something I say, I generally try to respond back or at least retweet it at the very least. So,
yeah, I'm getting better at that. I'm more plugged into Facebook than I am into Twitter. But
no, see, I'm the opposite.
I'm trying to get more plugged into Twitter. It's just for me, it's hard. If you don't log in, you miss some stuff. It's like history's gone and you can't see it. Facebook, I at least go back through and see stuff.
Well, see, Twitter's changing that now. They're going to. I guess they're coming up with some kind of system that's more like Facebook where it restructures things so that you can catch what you miss. And there are some Twitter apps that will keep track of where you left off. I think Tweetbot does that, actually.
Oh, does it?
And it will synchronize through iCloud to let you pick up where you left off on your Mac if you left off on your iPhone, things like that.
See, that's cool. I would like that. That's pretty nice.
So.
But.
Anyway, I saw Zootopia.
Oh, I did too.
Yes. What did you think of Zootopia?
I really enjoyed it. I thought the animation I thought was very, very well done. I mean, first time I've seen, you know, animation with fur that looks really realistic. I was feeling good about that. But the storyline itself was excellent, I thought. They did a great job with, you know, giving a story that was preachy but not too preachy. You know how Disney can be sometimes, where it's just, you know, showing the main point down your throat all the time. But this didn't really feel that way. And I just thought it was a great little story, kind of unique, kind of fresh and new. Whereas, you know, we haven't seen a lot of that with all the reboots we've had lately.
That's certainly true. Yeah, I would dare say that this is probably one of the best movies that Disney has ever done as far as animation goes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying that, yeah.
Yeah, it had a strong story. It had strong characters. It had a very strong visual. The style of the artwork was really good. And then separate from that, the technical aspects of the animation were also very good. So it had both going for it. The pacing was good. It was interesting for adults as well as for kids.
Mm-hmm.
There was almost like a separate message for kids versus for adults.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yep.
I really, really, really liked it. Like I read all the stuff about how people were saying, oh, this is one of the best Disney movies ever. And so I kind of let my expectations get a little high, which I try not to do. Mm. And it still exceeded my expectations. It was still really, really good. I look forward to seeing it again. I'm going to pick it up the moment it comes out on DVD. And while I don't mind animated films and family films, it's not really my thing. Like, I don't rush out to get the latest Pixar film necessarily. And if I do, it's only if my son is, like, drooling over it. Generally, I won't do it for myself. But I would get this for myself.
Okay. Yeah, see, I'm not sure I'll buy it for myself. I mean, my wife and I went to see it. We don't have any kids, so for us to see a movie like this, it's got to be something we want to see, obviously. And, you know, this one here, while I probably won't rush out and pick it up on DVD, I would not be opposed to seeing it again. It was a lot of fun. And like you said, it had enough stuff for adults that felt good about things. In fact, a couple of times I was like, well, that's kind of an adult, you know, comment they made or an adult scene in a movie. I'm like, okay, well, you know, but, you know, after what we see from movies these days, I think it fits right in with what kids are watching. But I was very happy with it. They did a great job. Of course, I saw it in one of the new theaters with the recliner. So we kind of, you know, got there. My wife had a glass of wine. I had a beer. We had some popcorn. It was good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't serve any beer at the theater I was at. Especially not to the kids.
You gotta come out towards me and go to the one in North Haven, because they do a nice job with the theater.
Yeah, I'm not much of a beer fan.
Well, I mean, you know, they have mixed drinks, they have wine, they have full food selection, which is kind of cool.
I am definitely into full food.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's got the, you know, nice recliners, and, you know, while my wife and I sat there, we pulled the armrest up with you, I'll probably put the armrest down. No offense, but just saying. Want my own space, you know.
So
I was very happy with Zootopia. It was a good movie.
Yes, it definitely. Highly recommended. So what else have you been up to?
I've been spending a little bit of time back on my PS4.
Okay.
I've been still looking for that game that's going to really catch my interest and do it. And
No Man's Sky
I haven't had a lot of time to play. Actually, since I got back from the cruise in January, I haven't had a lot of time to sit down and play.
Yeah.
But I've been seeing and hearing good things about The Division, the new Tom Clancy game.
Yeah.
And I picked it up Tuesday when it came out, and I am very impressed. It's a, you know, first-person shooter. It's online play only, but which is not usually my thing, because I like a story mode. I like your own thing to it. But there is enough of that going on that I feel satisfied, you know, with the game itself. The one thing that's weird about it is the gameplay is kind of different than I've ever had before. Kind of like playing a bounty hunter in The Old Republic, where you've got to hide behind cover and stuff. It's a very cover-oriented game.
And, okay.
You know, you're kind of sneaking around. You go behind cover. You can pop out and take out bad guys and stuff. I'm only level 4 right now, so I don't have any cool weapons yet. I haven't really gone very far, but
so is it kind of like Mass Effect?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. And I didn't play the Mass Effect as much as you did, but yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
But it's just different than I've ever played before. I'm not saying it's brand new gameplay, but it's different than other games. This company's, I forget what company put this out, but they also did. People want to say Fallout 4, but it's not Fallout 4.
That was Bethesda.
Yeah. No, what's the other game similar to that where it's Far Cry? They did the Far Cry series, so it's kind of like, but it's different gameplay structure than that. So the premise of this is New York City has been overrun. There's a virus going on, and we're trying to take back the city where individual operatives, there's breakdown chain of command, and you're going in and kind of take out bad guys, take out even good guys that are getting in your way. So it's kind of fun.
Now, I don't want to get too much into the details and derail the episode here, but there's been a lot of controversy about griefing. Have you run into much of that?
I have not seen any of that yet. Now, granted, I just got to the part where I'm into the game, to the regular gameplay now. I think the first three levels or so are really kind of training missions. You can still die. You still have to fight your way through things. But I got to the point where I finished up the first couple of missions, and all of a sudden, it was almost like the game reset. And I was like, oh, wait, did I hit a button? Did my cat unplug it? Did I lose something here? And it played like the whole intro again. It played, you know, almost like the you watch a TV show the first 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden you get the title and you know, that kind of stuff come up. That's what it did, and it kind of shocked me, but it brought me back into like the next set of the story. So now I'm in Manhattan. I'm fully engulfed. I've now got to build my stronghold. I've got to build up my defenses, and I'm now I'm fully in the area where you could get people that are going to be kind of pestering you and stuff. And what's happening is, since it's open world and you can go to any building, people are taking up residence in doorways, so you can't get through. Because you can't kill anybody. You can't kill other players. There's no PvP unless you're in some of the real hardcore zones, I guess. So if somebody stands in your way, you just can't get into that building, which is frustrating people to no end.
Now, how difficult is the combat?
Like I said, so far, I've died a couple times here and there, but it's not too bad. I'm waiting to get some better weapons and some better power-ups and armor and so forth. But, you know, you can. It's cool because you can kind of keep going behind things. You can keep moving around obstacles. You take cover. Unless you get really surrounded by bad guys, it's pretty easy to stay, you know, far enough back to be able to keep yourself safe and secure. And sometimes you'll have other guys with you fighting that, you know, are NPCs fighting for your side. But you don't always have that kind of support. It's fun right now. I'm sure it's going to get a lot harder as I get into the real hardcore parts of the game. But
yeah,
I'm impressed.
Okay, cool.
So hopefully I'll be doing some more of that this weekend and get up my character up in levels, a few levels there.
Maybe I'll have to pick it up.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a couple guys at work that are playing. We haven't hooked up yet online, but hopefully this weekend we're going to start doing that too.
Yeah, by the time I pick it up and get to the point where I can set up whatever this stronghold thing is you're talking about, the whole city of New York will be claimed and there won't be any. I'll have some little trash can in an alley somewhere that'll be my stronghold.
You'd be a little green guy? We'll call you.
Yeah. Just what I want, a video game where I get to play a panhandler in New York City. It's great.
A panhandler with an assault rifle.
Well, that helps.
That does help, yeah. It helps collecting donations.
Anyway.
Getting into the news, like I said, we had a lot of good stuff come up this week. First off, I think that we got to talk about is Civil War. New trailer came out today. I don't know if this is the last trailer we're going to get before the movie, but
probably.
This is probably the last full trailer. We'll get a lot of TV spots more than likely. What do you think of this trailer compared to the first one?
I liked the fact that it gave a little bit more about the story. Perhaps a little bit less about the characters, but more about the story of what's going on. So I think that was good. I don't know. Something felt different about this one. I don't know. I don't know what to think about it. And of course, there's the shot at the end. I don't think this is a spoiler because it's been all over the internet. But Spider-Man appears at the very end. And I know that that's something that they decided to add. Well, it's not that they decided to add it after coming up with the rest of the trailer. They created the trailer and Marvel Entertainment submitted two versions of it to Sony. Because they had to get permission to use Spider-Man in the marketing as well as in the film. And Sony signed off on it. They thought it looked great. And so they included this part of the trailer. But I was reading somewhere on Twitter, and I agreed with it emphatically, and I don't remember who it was that said it, that the tone of the scene with Spider-Man felt different from everything else. Like, it had this really kind of a dark, tense tone to it. And then the Spider-Man thing happened, and it almost felt a little too lighthearted, a little bit too comical. Not really comical, okay. I guess.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, the rest of the story is definitely very dark, and I don't think we're going to see, you know, as much lightheartedness as we did in some of the other Marvel properties leading up to this. You know, Tony Stark's always a bit lighthearted sometimes, but this is getting very, very dark. And I mean, obviously, Civil War, it's, you know, friend against friend, of course, it's going to be darker. But you're right, that part did seem different from the rest of the trailer.
Yeah.
Is that just Spider-Man's character? Is he, I mean, he's never been really serious about stuff. He's always kind of cracking jokes and being the smart-ass kid.
And so is Tony Stark, too. So the interaction between those two.
Yeah, but Tony's had that darker side because of the whole
true, you know,
alcohol addiction and so forth going on that he's had from time to time.
I don't know. The other thing about the Spider-Man is the suit.
Yeah.
And I know that, without getting into spoilers, I know that the suit has a certain amount of relevancy in the movie. I mean, it's not an A plot. It's not a B plot. It's like an F or G plot. It's like way, way, way down there in priority. But the suit we see there is not the suit we first see Spider-Man in, apparently.
In the movie? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I don't know. It looks... It reminds me on first glance of the 1960s television Spider-Man. It felt like a step backwards from the other suits that we've seen in the last few films.
Okay. See, I never thought about that, really.
And maybe that's not a bad thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It felt like, wow, that's the suit? I could make that. Which I could,
okay.
But it just, you know, I don't know. And, you know, we only got a brief glimpse of it. I'm watching it on a computer screen, so, you know, it's small. I don't know. Maybe it'll work out okay, but, like, on first glance, I was kind of like,
saying that suit compared to the one we had in, like, the most recent Sony movies?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you mean. This is definitely more comic book esque than high tech Batman. Sorry, Spider-Man in the most recent movies we've seen, because they did look more high tech, I guess, in the movies.
Yeah, it felt campier to me than everything else that we've seen so far from the Marvel Universe. It felt like it didn't fit with everything else. I mean, you look at Captain America's suit, and it's a lot more practical. You look at the Falcon suit; it's very practical. You look at Well, obviously, Iron Man's is practical because that's part of the nature of the suit. But
right.
And again, Thor, it kind of doesn't count either. But most of these costumes are a little more realistic, like Hawkeye, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this, and it's like, really? It's like bright red, bright blue. I mean, you're going to be a target for any bad guy with a gun. I don't know. Again, it's not a bad thing. It felt like it was out of place. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I mean, I didn't notice it before until you mentioned this, but I can kind of see that.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about Civil War in Random Chatter, which we're recording right after this episode. Mm-hmm. Again, it's going to be episode 102, where we do our spring movie preview. But just real quick, in a nutshell, what are your thoughts on this movie so far?
I am looking forward to it. I mean, it's one of those things where I don't know anything about the comic storyline part of this, but I'm so interested to see how they handle it, because I've liked all the characters, and now it's going to be tough for me to say, okay, well, who's the good guys, who's the bad guys? I like this guy on that side and this guy on the other side, so who do I root for? You know, there's no cut or dried way to make this happen, I think. They both have valid points going into this, and we'll see how this ends up.
Right. And I think that's the compelling thing, is that they do both have compelling points on both sides of the argument. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes the conflict more emotional. That's what makes us more invested in the conflict. I think if it were a little more clear cut, then basically you've just got half of the heroes being bad guys. You don't really know who to root for.
Right. It's not like heroes going up against evil. It's two sides of the same coin, really.
Right. Well, I mean, in a way.
Now, this is going to be part one, right? Because there is part two of Civil War coming? Or am I making that up?
I think you're making that up, but then you're the second person who said that to me today.
I could have sworn I thought this there was going to be two parts to Civil War. Or maybe...
Well, see, now I feel like an idiot because I feel like I should know this. But I thought that this is...
Maybe not. I thought for some reason one of the screen caps I saw from some comic convention where they laid out Marvel's plan showed two versions of Civil War down the road, you know.
I mean, I thought that this is... I mean, there's going to be fallout from this that carries over into the next Avengers film, I thought, but... I mean, I think this is its own film. I don't think it's officially a part one and part two.
Okay.
But now I feel like maybe I'm wrong. oh, no, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I'm on the podcast now.
I should have brought this up live. I guess. Yeah, probably.
I'm pretty confident that while the story, you know, aspects of the story are definitely going to continue, it is not officially part one of two.
Okay.
There's not going to be a Civil War part two, per se.
Oh, you know what I was thinking? I just looked at some listings here. I was thinking of Infinity War part one and part two for the Avengers.
Okay. Yeah, there are two parts for the Infinity War. But, you know, I paused because you're the second person literally today who said that to me. It's like, this is the first one of the two, right? And I'm like, well, no, this is the third. This is Captain America 3. And they're like, no, of the Civil War thing. I'm like, well, no, I don't think so.
Wikipedia has it as Captain America Civil War 2016, Doctor Strange 2016, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 next year, then Spider-Man 2017, Thor 17, Black Panther 18, then the Infinity War starting in 18 as well. So
Okay. Yeah. So I was just about to say too, as much as I loathe talking about politics, you could argue that this is analogous to what's going on, at least in our country in the United States right now, is you've got two different political sides, and this has been the case for quite a while. It seems like the rift between liberals and conservatives just gets deeper and deeper and deeper every year. And now we've got the Republican front runner is one that most people can't stand. The Democratic front runner is one that seems like most people can't stand.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're voting for the lesser of two evils. We don't really know, like, you have politicians on one side, politicians on the other. It's not like you have one side that's right and one side that's wrong. You've got two different sides looking at the same stuff from two different perspectives, and instead of coming together to work as a team, they're, you know, splitting off, and you've got this war, you've got this civil war, really, and it's
let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Well, as long as it's the superheroes duking it out and not us, I don't care.
That's true.
But I mean, it is somewhat at least representative. I don't even think it's trying to be necessarily. I mean, it's just a storyline. And honestly, the storyline is more representative of other social issues that we've had over the decades with civil rights and things like that. But there is a little bit of a reflection there on what's going on, you know, in our own country. We have friends and relatives and coworkers, and once certain issues come up, it's like all of a sudden your friends are no longer your friends. It's weird, and it's sad. But anyway, that's the closest I plan to ever coming to. To political discussions here.
We're not going to do politic chatter?
No.
Good.
No. No. If someone else wants to host that show, go for it. I am right out.
Well, speaking of trailers that came out recently, have you seen the second trailer or even the first trailer for Hardcore Henry?
I have.
I saw this, the first one at least, before Deadpool, one of the screens I saw at Deadpool. And I had no idea. Now, did you know this was coming out? Did you have any fair warning? I'll say.
So here's what happened with me on this. And in a moment, we'll actually discuss what it is. But I very frequently, at least a couple of times a week, check the trailers app on my Apple TV, because I love watching movie trailers. And I would rather watch them on my television in high definition than on YouTube on my phone.
Okay.
Fair enough. I was going through the new selections and I saw Hardcore Henry, and I'm like, well, that's, I mean, not that Apple shies away from putting more controversial movies up on their trailers thing, but like, I'm okay. Like, that's right off the bat, it sounds like, you know, an NC-17 or something you're not going to see in the theaters. I'm like, why would they bother plugging the trailer here? And so I clicked on it and read the description. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's not at all what the title right. makes it sound. You know, it's not a porn movie. I'm like, okay, whew. So that's out of the way. And I read the description and I'm like, oh, so the whole movie is in first person?
Yeah.
And I clicked on the trailer and I must have watched it like four or five times in a row. I was absolutely fascinated just by the trailer. And I'm thinking, wow, and they're going to do an entire movie like this? And then I wonder if it's like being done as one, like, big continuous cut. Like, is it in real time? I'm sure they have cuts. Like,
yeah.
The opening of Serenity, it was one big cut as Mel's walking through the ship, but as he goes down the stairs from the upper floor to the lower floor, they actually cut the take and then did a separate take, because the top and bottom floor of the ship, the set was actually all on one level. But it appears to be one seamless cut. So are they, I'm sure they'll have, you know, technically they'll do some cuts here and there, but are they going to make it appear as if it's just one big long cut?
Yeah, that's the impression I got from watching it. I mean, I haven't really read anything on this movie yet, but it does feel that way. I feel like they want this to be, you know, you are the main character of the movie experiencing, and I guess from what I can tell, you know, you wake up, you're being put back together or something, I guess. But so you're probably damaged. Your memory is gone a little bit. Maybe, you know, I have a feeling that we're going to be learning about who we are as a character as the main character of the movie does, you know,
which I like that. Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. It's a good way to bring you into the story. And, to, I think the movies that do that end up engaging the audience in a way that movies that don't fail to. One of my favorite examples of that is The Matrix.
Yeah.
Neo doesn't have any clue what's going on any more than you do. And then he is having these mysteries revealed to him as you do. And that.
Yeah, I was also thinking of a Memento kind of the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Oh, what a great movie.
So now, that being said, this movie intrigues me. It sounds like it intrigues you as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we both played first-person shooter games. This feels a lot like that. In fact, even in the second trailer, they're tossing you weapons. It feels like, you know, you would be if you were, you know, playing Doom back in, you know, the early 90s there, and you had the, you know.
I don't know. Nobody tossed me any weapons. They just shot me all the time. Wish people tossed me weapons.
But, you know, the downside of this is it feels very frantic. It feels, you know, almost to the point where, boy, I got to look away because I'm going to get a headache, you know, from watching some of the way this camera bounces around and moves back and forth.
You do have to keep in mind that you saw a trailer that has a bunch of scenes cut together really rapidly. When we're watching the actual film, it might not have that same effect.
Maybe not. Maybe not. We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I would caution people that are prone to migraines or maybe motion sickness. This may not be the right movie for you, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, this is another one that we'll talk about in random chatter. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I think I'm going to see it in the theater. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we have. Okay. Yeah.
Well, this doesn't sound good.
Well, you know, I'm reading the notes here, and I'm just I get taken back by something. It's like, okay, Ghostbusters animated movie. Sony's working on an animated movie for Ghostbusters.
I'm wondering if we're not getting too much Ghostbusters all of a sudden.
Well, my whole thing is, I mean, okay, I enjoyed the Ghostbusters animated series back when it was on.
Which one?
Oh, there was more than one?
Oh, you didn't know that? There was the Ghostbusters, which had nothing to do with the characters from the film. And okay, then there was the one called The Real Ghostbusters, which was the characters from the film.
Okay.
And that one, I think JMS actually wrote a bunch of episodes.
Oh, did he? I enjoyed that. This is one I remember seeing because it had the characters from the movie.
Okay. Yeah, that was actually the second series.
Okay. So that's one I saw. And it looks like everything I've seen about this one shows those characters in the picture. I don't know if they just used them because that's what they had or if they're basing it on those characters.
Yeah, I think they just grabbed that because it was what they had.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's not actually a still from this this planned animated one. So here's the other thing that scares me a little bit about this animated one. First of all, I think we're maybe getting a little overexposed on Ghostbusters coming up soon, which we'll get to that in a second. This one is being produced by Ivan Reitman, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's being directed by, and I might get the name incorrect, but Fletcher Maules?
Okay, I'll go with that.
Sure on the last name. He is the guy that directs those Clash of Clans commercials.
Okay, interesting.
So, and while they're cute and they're memorable, really? I mean, that qualifies you to take on an animated version of a franchise that Sony is desperately trying to turn into a tentpole universe?
Yeah, I'm
a little worried.
Well, I think your first comment is more right than not that, you know, are we getting too much Ghostbusters too soon?
Yeah.
I mean, Ghostbusters, while, you know, I enjoyed the movie back when it came out, I wasn't as big of a fan as of the sequels, but I do like that universe. I like what they did with it. Now it's like you're getting a new movie, new characters. It's a full reboot. We're getting an animated series as well. They're trying to make it into more than it really is, I think. I mean, I'm sorry, Nate from our Sabacktail podcast. He's a huge Ghostbusters fan. I don't want to, you know, belittle what we're saying about Ghostbusters, but, you know, is it big enough to really do all this with so quickly? Shouldn't we let them find their feet with this new movie, see if it has an audience before we start putting all this stuff into it?
See, it would bother me less if they were doing an animated Ghostbusters television series. But they're doing an animated Ghostbusters movie. So they've got the Paul Feig movie, the one with Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy and stuff that we just saw the trailer for recently. There's also another upcoming live-action one by the Russo brothers, the guys who did Captain America Civil War. And then there's also going to be this animated movie. There's going to be three radically different Ghostbusters movies in the theaters. And I have to think they're competing with themselves.
Are they all being done by Sony?
Yeah, Sony owns the property.
So, okay.
Sony's trying to create a new, you know, a Star Wars, a Star Trek, a Marvel comic. Sony doesn't have anything like that. Even when it comes to comic books, they have, I think they only have Spider-Man now.
And they did such a great job with that. Oh, never mind.
Back up
a second.
As they do every couple of years.
Right. The one from the Russo brothers, what is that one? I don't think I've heard about this one. There's a second live-action movie coming out?
Yeah, I forget who signed on for it. And it was announced about the same time as the Paul Feig one, so it was like, for a day or two, it was kind of like, no, it's going to have all guys in the cast. No, it's going to have all girls in the cast. No, it's talking about.
Okay, they've got these actresses signed up. Okay, so there really is two movies coming out.
And there was like a little war going on online about the two different sets of rumors being conflicting, and then everybody found out, no, they're both true.
Wow. That seems awful awkward.
Yeah.
You know, two completely different movies, same time frame, and an animated movie. Which, you know, we know from Star Wars how well that worked out. Because, I mean, yeah, I like the Clone Wars, but the movie, the Clone theatrical Wars movie, release. Really?
Yeah. You know, yeah, but that's, I mean, that's kind of a unique situation, too.
I mean, you don't see too many movies that are mixing live action and animation in the same format, in movies, for example. I mean, you don't see Disney putting out, you know, a live-action Zootopia and then an animated Zootopia.
Right.
You know, it just seems weird.
Yeah. I think it would be hard to get a lot of those animals to stand up on their hind legs for the live-action.
I don't know. Have you seen the, you know, some of the tricks on YouTube and stuff?
Well, that's true.
Okay, bad example, but you know what I'm saying. Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens with this. I mean, I am looking forward to the movie coming out. The first one with Kristen Wiig and so forth. That looks funny. I hope they can recapture some of the magic from the first one.
I just hope they don't destroy the franchise in the process. You know, I'm optimistic for what they're bringing out. They've got some good names behind things. None of these look bad in and of themselves. It's the combination of all of them put together that looks like you're diluting your own franchise rather than building it. That's my concern.
True. I mean, but you know, when I think of Ghostbusters, I think of the original movie. I don't even think of the sequels.
Well, and that's the other thing too. It's like you've still got to get people to stop doing that. If you want to move forward with new characters and rebuild the franchise again, you have to get us to stop thinking of Egon and Venkman and et cetera.
Right. And it looks like they're modeling this one here with the girls in it after that same matchups. I mean, they have the same characters basically.
Yeah. Yeah. The archetypes are the same. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But still, it's like you've got to connect with them as the Ghostbusters now in order to get people to want to see more of this. But then if you switch it up again right off the bat to, well, no, they're not the Ghostbusters. These guys are the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, anyway. I do too. I mean, I'm a little worried for this because, I mean, especially something you cherish like Ghostbusters. I mean, that was a great time, you know, back in the day when we saw that first one. What was it? 84, looks like. So, I don't know. You know, I mean, Ghostbusters 2, which I don't really remember that much. Return of Ghostbusters in 2007? I don't remember this at all.
What?
That was in the theater?
No. Where are you seeing that?
IMDb. Return of the Ghostbusters 2007. Director Hank Braxton.
Was it a documentary? Was it an animated film? What? No,
it's live action, it looks like.
Who was in it?
Good question. Tim Johnson.
Who?
J. Michael Weiss. Joel Hanson. I don't know any of these names.
It's got to be a documentary on the making of the Ghostbusters or something.
No, the Ghostbusters Adventure Crew returned to tackle the terrors of the night.
Oh, vampires.
I don't know.
People already pretend the second one didn't exist. I think it's pretty easy to pretend that this one didn't exist.
Wow, yeah.
In fact, I'm not convinced it did.
It was an hour and 25 minutes long. Came out October 26, 2007.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Okay.
I may have to see this just to report back.
All right. So now you got me curious here. I'm going to go to the expert on all things movie related, and that is Netflix.com.
Okay.
Which is by no means the expert on all things movie related, but I'm going to do a search here and see if they have such a thing. If I can spell it correctly.
Let's see.
No.
Oh, it's set in Denver. The Mile High City is rocked when ancient Egyptian menace comes to town, and the Denver Ghostbusters must return to save the universe once more. In this sequel to the internet cult hit Freddy vs. Ghostbusters, the boys in gray find themselves up to their eyeballs in spooks as a greater threat looms on the horizon.
It's got to be a fan movie or something.
Wow, I don't know. Boy. Let's see what,
I'm looking here on Netflix. Okay. So they've got the 2016 reboot. They've got Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters, the animated series. Now this is the one with the gorilla and the possessed car.
Which one's that? Ghostbusters,
the animated series, not the one you saw.
Okay. Yep.
Then they've got the real Ghostbusters. And there's a page two.
Okay.
That's it.
I'm reading IMDb. It says, shot in Denver, Colorado. Braxton Film is a production company, which Braxton was the director.
It's got to be a fan film.
Trivia. This film was made on a budget of $3,000, took around 8 months to shoot,
Yeah.
Two CGI artists worked for another 18 months to complete the films.
And never worked again.
Shots. Yeah. Wow. Okay. This okay. is very interesting. But it comes up on IMDb. Is it on Netflix?
No. No, it's okay. It's not.
No. Okay. Well, okay. That is interesting. Let the ask Nate if he ever saw that.
Yeah, Nate. Fill us in, man.
What else do we have here? Another big convention or another big publicity thing where mm-hmm. guys are pulling out and not wanting to show their wares anymore. E3.
Yes.
The big game convention.
Yeah.
Now, we've seen this a lot with a lot of things. I mean, there was big companies are not willing to put forth the money to come to conventions to set up their booths. It costs a lot of money to bring everything out there, pay for all the hotels, airfare, setting up a booth. The booths themselves are expensive. I did that for companies in the past where, a 10x10 booth nicely outfitted might cost you just to build the physical booth part, $10,000.
Right,
between the graphics and the structure and so forth. So, I don't blame these companies, but it's interesting that now E3 is going to be losing, EA,
some big names, yeah,
yeah, Activision, Blizzard are already going away. Now Disney Interactive is not going to be there. Wargaming is not going to be there.
Now the thing about this is you're right about the conventions and trade shows and stuff like that, and generally there are a lot of them, but. There are always like the mecca of various different things.
Right.
For film and a lot of other things, you've got South by Southwest. You've got the Cannes Film Festival. You've got San Diego Comic-Con always used to be the big one.
Mm.
For Star Wars, you have Celebration. I mean, we talked about that one before. And for for consumer electronics, for video games, E3 was always the big one. E3 has been around since 1995. That's where we saw the debut of the PlayStation. That's okay, where Nintendo yep. has made a lot of its big announcements. That's where we saw, the Nintendo 64, Super Mario Galaxy 64, stuff like that. I mean, this was always where you get the big announcements from.
Mm-hmm.
And now, and over the last few years, a lot of people have been complaining. And it seems to be the same type of complaints as what San Diego Comic-Con has turned into, where it's almost all just journalists and other industry people.
Well, I think it's the difference also between trade shows and conventions. And I kind of misspoke by saying convention because E3 is really a trade show. Are the days of trade shows really going by?
But E3 was always open to the consumers. I mean, that was really... Yeah, I don't know. Like when I think trade show, I think okay, that's where the people within the industry go to get exposure to other technologies and stuff within the industry, et cetera.
Right, but a lot of those even have like an open day for
the consumers.
Right, the average person going on like say maybe the Sunday of the trade show, but I mean, it used to be in times before the internet, if you wanted to bring out your new products, you'd do it at a trade show. You'd do a press release, you'd bring out your new stuff, you'd have a big dog and pony show. Nowadays, all the specs are out there even before they do the big announcement or like within minutes of it. So, as a journalist, if I'm going to be covering something at a trade show, I can do it from my living room couch as easily as I can do it from, the convention, unless I'm one of those lucky few bigwigs that get the... Okay, come on behind the curtain, and we're going to give you a private showing of this new wonderful product we have.
Yeah, but the reason you can do it from behind your couch, you said behind the curtain from your couch. Okay,
from
got
my
it.
Couch.
Sorry,
yes, not behind my couch.
Mixing my analogies. I think we have our show title from behind the couch. No, the reason you can do it from your couch is because of the people who go and cover it.
Always,
at the conventions and post it immediately to Twitter and such.
But as a company, you can put a press release out and have a site posted for all your, especially if it's like a video game. I mean, we don't have to have a convention to come out with the new video game itself. We're going to put the video up. We're going to have, here's some actual gameplay of the game. Talk to the designers. Here's an interview with the guy that did the artwork.
And I think that's what some of these are finally getting to. Like it's...
Mm.
it used to always be that they would do the conventions instead because there was all the pomp and circumstance, but now they're doing exactly what you just said, especially I think the bigger companies like EA and Activision and Disney. It's like,
right,
they are their own event almost.
Yeah, you know, and even small stuff. I mean, things like, you know, go to my PC and all this other stuff where you can actually do a virtual demo with somebody, you know, face to face on the computers, where I don't have to fly to your city and stay in a hotel and meet with you, your company. I can just do a demonstration right on the computer with you. Yeah. The technology's got to the point now where does it make sense for me to spend all that money to go out and just shake a few hands? I mean, as much as I don't want to see that happen, I like the fact that we have these kind of trade shows where people can go and get hands on. I can get real then, you know, experience from these people saying, you know, I actually touched the product. This is what it did. This is what I felt like when I used it. That means more to me than just reading a press release with specs.
Well, yeah, the trade shows is that you can actually see things in person. But, you know, when I look at the whole convention thing, and again, there's a difference between trade shows and conventions, but when I look at the convention thing, I keep thinking back to the differences between San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con. Now, I've never been to SDCC. I have been to New York Comic-Con, as have you.
Yeah.
And the San Diego Comic-Con, the general consensus from the man on the street, so to speak, seems to be that it's not what it used to be. It's kind of deteriorated. And on the flip side, New York Comic Con is growing in popularity, and it seems to be getting bigger panels, bigger celebrities, bigger announcements as well. And the only thing that I can really see that is different between the two is, one, people seem to be happier with the way New York Comic Con is being run and handled by the people who run it. San Diego Comic-Con, if I recall, is a private thing. And New York Comic-Con is done by Reed Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that San Diego Comic-Con, again, seems to be primarily press, and New York Comic-Con still seems to be primarily consumers.
Yeah, okay.
And there was a lot of stuff I saw at New York Comic-Con that had already kind of been leaked out at the press, but there were still a lot of the consumers there who hadn't really gotten a lot of exposure to it, or didn't know that there was a post on a website somewhere, or wanted to be able to get to see it hands-on.
Well, there's also the point of, you know, at a thing like New York Comic Con, I want to go because I get to see something in a room full of other fans. You know,
right.
I'm there with you know, 10,000 of my closest friends kind of seeing the new episode of, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever it was. Then when you get something exclusive, even if it's just for, you know, like the day, it feels cool. You know, it's like, you know, hey, I got to see this before anybody else did, type thing.
But keep in mind, video games are, I mean, they're a multi-gazillion dollar industry too. I mean, a successful video game brings in the kind of money that, you know, big name movies do.
Right.
So, and you have rabid fans who will go and want to see footage of the new Zelda game that Nintendo's been talking about for the last 3 years that still hasn't, you know, made an appearance anywhere. They want to see the new characters from the next Mortal Kombat game. They want to see footage of Star Wars Battleground. I mean, look at the people at Celebration who were lined up to see that.
Right,
and
I think that's a little bit different too. It's
on.
Not just, you know, the especially Celebration. That is a very closed group of like-minded individuals that are there for just one thing. You know, so that kind of thing worked out really well there at New York Comic Con. You know, it's a broad base
right.
of stuff.
But E3 on the other
room
hand,
is meant, what's that?
But E3 on the other hand, I mean, Celebration, you have a bunch of people interested in Star Wars. Some gaming, some cosplay, some just the movies, some just the books. At E3, you have a bunch of people interested in electronics and video games. Some just first-person shooters, some just RPGs. But, yeah, so the Battlefront thing, New York Comic Con, you know, it might have done well. It might not have. But, you know, E3, that's the kind of thing where you'd think that you would do that sort of thing. So, to me, in hindsight, it seems weird that EA would set up something for Battlefront at Celebration and then completely neglect E3 entirely, other than the fact that, you know, they're spending over $1 million on a booth.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting to have this conversation. I don't know what the answer is down the road. You know, I just do know that from the side of things of doing trade shows myself, mm-hmm. Never on that scale. We never had a product that was, as sought after as, say, Battlefront. But, when I did some work for a company that did aviation related consulting work, and we had a booth for a new website we were launching. This goes back to like 99, back when B2B stuff was kind of new. You know, we went to the Singapore Air Show, and, we had a 20 by 10 booth, I think it was, and I can't remember what the booth space rental was, but to build the booth that we had, it was a erector set type structure with a bunch of graphics that were magnetically posted to this thing. And we're a small company. It was about $80,000 just for the booth itself, the graphics, the metal framework, not to mention the shipping out to Singapore, the hotel stay for four or five guys, the flights out there, the food, the meals. I mean, that added up quite a bit. Now, for a big company like, Sony, obviously a much bigger budget, but at what point do you see there's diminishing returns for what we can, what we're going to get out of this, and what's the best way to promote our products?
Right, exactly. And that's exactly where I think EA and Activision and Disney are coming from.
Mm.
It doesn't bode well for E3 though.
No, it certainly doesn't. No. I mean, I guess on the upside, there's still going to be releases of games. We're still going to see the stuff coming out. It's going to be, not timed around one event like E3 every year. I mean, look at what was the name of the Apple convention that got shut down years ago when Apple pulled out? Macworld Expo.
Yeah.
That was a private group putting this together, and Apple always kind of planned their stuff around it. At some point, they just said, you know what? We don't want to have to do our production schedule and our release schedule based on somebody else's timetable. So we're going to do our things when we want to and not have to worry about meeting a deadline of Macworld Expo.
Apple has been known to do that sort of thing before. We want to do it our way.
Right. But I think this is liberating for a lot of companies, too. Now you don't have companies like EA trying to say, okay, we got to hit this date. Regardless of whether it's ready or not, we got to hit this date.
Exactly.
I'd rather have them wait, put out the right game with the right stuff, and now they can do betas. We can have teasers on, PlayStation Network or the Xbox Network, and get it out in the hands of people and let them play it.
And releasing things before it's ready is something that EA has been notorious for in the past.
Well, I think a lot of companies are. I mean, when's the last time you bought a disc for your PlayStation that you put in and used right away without having to download content?
I watched the Blu-ray of Mad Max.
That's not what I meant.
Oh. Well, that's the best answer I can give you. That's about the only answer that counts.
Yeah, but I mean,
No.
The Division Tuesday night, and immediately he said, downloading an update. I'm like, okay, figured that, I mean, I planned on coming home, popping the disc, then doing a couple things before I sat down to play. I looked at the download, it said 6 hours. I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah,
that really takes the fun out of buying a new game. I mean, anything else, you buy a new game, or you buy a new anything, you buy a new movie, you buy a new toy, you bring it home, you open up the box, and you start using it. And with this, it's like you have to sit there and wait. Like you said, for 6 hours, it's like you might as well go to bed. Because
I heard people having problems getting on. I actually paused it and started it, and it changed like 20 minutes. But still, I had another buddy of mine from work that he said he couldn't get on until about 9 o'clock that night.
Well, and that's the thing. If you're an adult and you go to work and then you pick it up after work and you didn't take the day off or something, by the time this download's done, it's like, well, now I got to go to bed.
Right.
So, it is kind of obnoxious. And I understand why they do it from a business point of view. And I do appreciate the fact that we are now at a point, technologically speaking, where we have the ability to do updates like this. I just wish it didn't become a standard that you have these day one patches that are so massive. I mean, if it's like a little tweak here or there, then fine, right. So be it.
It's almost like we're going to, lock it down. This is our production for the disc. We know we're going to have this, and this done for the release date for the street. Yeah. And we don't have to worry about getting the disc created. It actually gives them a couple more weeks worth of time to get the thing finished. You know what I mean? It's frustrating, but that's the way it's working out now.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should move on from this topic. We're kind of running a little long here. Like usual, you know, that's our our modus operandi, I guess. But one more quick little news item here. I saw a bit about this today online as well. We're going to get a Tomb Raider reboot, possibly.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I've been a big fan of Tomb Raider. I liked what they did with the movies. They were fun. I wouldn't say they were great cinema, but they were fun. And I've always liked the games.
Yeah, they were okay. The games were good, yeah.
And now we have another reason to like this. Because there's been talk about Daisy Ridley being the new Tomb Raider. I kind of like that.
At the risk of signing myself up for a lot of hate mail, I don't.
Really? Wow, okay. So what? Now, I'm kind of looking at this as like, okay, well, her character in The Force Awakens was, you know, a scrappy kind of survivor, self-sufficient,
yep,
doing her own thing. And I'm like, okay, we could make this into a really strong, you know, she played a strong female character, and Lara Croft is another strong female character. I think she could do a great job with that.
That's the problem. She can do a great job with that.
Okay, so why aren't you excited about this?
I want her to be Rey. She's Rey.
Yeah, but I want her to be more than that. I want her to be a good actress that we're going to get to see a lot of down the road in a lot of different things.
Okay.
I mean, you know, kind of look at it as Harrison Ford versus Mark Hamill. We've seen a lot of Harrison Ford in the last, you know, 20 years.
Yeah.
How much Mark Hamill have you seen?
But see, to me, there's a difference between, you know, Harrison Ford doing Han Solo, and then Harrison Ford doing Regarding Henry and Air Force One, mm-hmm, and Presumed Innocent, right, and Firewall and things like that. To me, though,
you had to ring a firewall. Sorry.
I'm going to get my dog. best movie line ever. Anyway. And then there was that conversation in the apartment. I have to go back and rewatch that. I may do a commentary on that movie someday. That's just
like, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you there. I'm sorry.
MST3K really sort of thing. We totally have to do something.
We like should, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So there's a difference between that to me and Harrison Ford doing Han Solo and Indiana Jones. And I know I'm treading on sacred ground here. I'm being crowned a heretic by most people out there, but
maybe, yeah.
Indiana Jones is an iconic character. The guy from Regarding Henry, whose name I assume was Henry, and otherwise I don't remember much about it. He's not an iconic character. The guy in Firewall, not an iconic character. Even the Tom Clancy stuff he did, even mm-hmm, Air Force One,
yep.
You know, those are memorable, but they're not iconic. They're not like...
So you only want him to do iconic stuff, or Daisy Ridley in this case, to do iconic stuff.
No, I want to enjoy Rey as Rey, and I guess I want... Like, I'm possessive of that actor in that role now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm cool with her. Listen, don't get me wrong. Daisy Ridley has proven herself to be an incredible actress just from this film alone, from The Force Awakens. And I wish her nothing but the greatest of careers. And, you know, as a fan, she has my full support. I guess there's a difference between her going off and doing other dramas or doing a comedy or something like that and taking something. I mean, there's actually been talk of her picking up as the new Indiana Jones, like, you know, his niece or something. And like, I get that too. I understand the logic behind that. I agree with the logic behind that. And I think that much like with the Tomb Raider thing, I think she would do phenomenally well. That's the problem. I don't want to confuse that iconography with each other. Like, I guess to me, I've enjoyed Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones, but they're still in the back of my mind. Every time I watch Indiana Jones, it's like, okay, it's like it's the not Han Solo running around with a whip.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's still in the back of my mind. I don't want that in the back of my mind if I'm watching her take on some other big role where she is going to be this pop culture iconic geek centric. The character's not geek centric, but you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, the whole fan following thing.
Yeah, I hear you. Yep.
It's a personal thing. It has nothing to do with the quality of her as an actress or as a person or anything like that. It's just, I love the character of Rey. As indicated by my bracket on Echo Base when we were doing the This Is Madness, March Madness bracket things.
Yep.
It's because of the good job that she did as Rey that I want her to just be Rey, just for a while. Like, just let us bask in this for right now. Let's not go try to find something else to shove her into instead.
Yeah. I'd like to see her just do a bunch of other stuff so she doesn't get, you know, pigeonholed into that
one thing
of being a sci-fi, you know, actress.
Right.
I mean, you know, you look at Harrison Ford, I just pulled up his IMDb page just to refresh my memory. And, you know, when it comes up and it shows known for, and it shows Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Blade Runner. I mean, three iconic characters in iconic movies that I absolutely love. And none of them make me go, oh, yeah, okay, I wish he hadn't done that, or, you know, oh, that's different than, you know, I don't look at him and say, okay, he's Han Solo. I look at Harrison Ford as Harrison Ford. He's done so much stuff that I've loved over the years, and some stuff that wasn't that great, but he's always been working. He's been in theaters. He's been doing stuff that has just been, you know, good to see. I mean, even something like Age of Adeline that we talked about in the past, you know, he's done so much stuff and he's a good actor. So having him do all these different roles makes me feel warm and fuzzy about how good of an actor he is.
Yes.
Because the minute you can do multiple things, that to me is a great actor. It's when you look at the thing and say, okay, that's just the same character he played in that movie, or that's the same character he played back on that TV show. It's the same all the time. That to me isn't a good actor. You know, but it's when you look at somebody and go, oh, wow. You know,
Daisy Ridley playing, someone diving into these big cavernous tombs, deserted structures and hunting around for things in like dusty, raggedy clothes. That was Rey on Jakku.
Right.
We had it already. And well, it's also Lara Croft. It's like,
though,
we're having Rey as Tomb Raider and not Daisy Ridley as Tomb Raider. I mean, it's the same reason why I don't want to see Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, okay, so here's some news. Sylvester Stallone has met with the people making Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay.
And apparently he's going to be in that role. And indications are he's going to have a costume that looks Judge Dredd-ish, which I think is just going to be a NovaCore costume because it looks a little Judge Dredd-ish. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. Sylvester Stallone played Judge Dredd. So seeing him as a NovaCore guy, it's going to be, oh, okay, well, there's Rocket Raccoon and Groot, and there's Sylvester Stallone. I don't want that to be what I see when I'm watching Tomb Raider. I don't want it to be, oh, okay, there's Rey, and now I have to get to the point in the film where I can have her stop being Rey and now become Lara Croft.
Yep.
But I know I'm in the minority here. Listen, and
I hope it turns into more than just that for me. If that's a great role and makes her some money, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But I want to see her start doing some other stuff that's different, too. I mean, like you said, you don't want to be pigeonholed into that same type. Archetype character. You know, I look back at Harrison Ford stuff. I'm just kind of looking back to all this stuff that I've like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, I forgot about that one. You know, it's like Frantic. That was a great movie he was in. He played, you know, the doctor that his wife was killed, and it's like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then his wife was taken, prisoner, I think it was, in Europe. And then, you know, the one I'm thinking of before was The Fugitive. He played Dr. Richard Kimball. And that was a great movie. But then, you know, stuff like The Devil's Own and, 6 Days and Seven Nights was kind of comedy to it. And, you know, all these movies that have been just really well acted by him, whether or not they're good movies or not, is a different story. But he's done a lot of really good things, even down to playing Colonel Graf in Ender's Game. you know? He's a very versatile actor, and I can't wait to see Daisy Ridley grow into that very versatile actor herself.
Yeah. No, I agree. Again, want to make it clear, I have
okay,
high,
yes,
both high hopes and high expectations for her career, and I wish her nothing but the greatest of success.
And for all the hate mail, that's eric@randomchatter.com.
It's my love for her and my love for how just mind-bogglingly excellent she was as Rey. It's that love for her as Rey that is going to make it hard for me, at least for a while, to see her as another character, especially as a character that is already ingrained in our pop culture and in our geek culture as strongly as Lara Croft is. So that being said, I think like I would warm up to it. Okay. And I think, you know, Tomb Raider, it's a good idea to have that be rebooted. We've talked about reboots before, but I think that this is the time for that. We haven't had, I mean, the last Indiana Jones movie really was kind of crap.
Yeah.
And yet that whole spelunking, tomb raiding, underground cave, you know, explorer type movie is something we haven't really had a good one of for quite a while. And I would like to see that type of movie come back.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm optimistic about all of this. It's just people started talking about Daisy Ridley and I'm like, yeah, I get it. I just, but
well,
she's
it's still
Rey
early.
Right now.
Nothing's
just
been decided yet. We'll have to wait
touch
and
her.
See.
Yeah.
So I'm interested. We'll see what happens, but I'm interested. We'll see where it goes.
Well, we are running long. Yes. So we should get into the weekly. What were they thinking?
Yeah. Why don't you bring us up to speed there? What you find here?
Well, we have two.
Okay.
One, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. You probably know who Seth Rogen is. You might not know Evan Goldberg. They've actually done a lot of movies as a team together. They did This Is the End. They did Neighbors, which was very okay. successful.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a lot of good stuff. One of their upcoming projects is Where's Waldo?
Okay.
Which,
interesting.
I don't really know how you make a movie.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Out of
yeah.
Where's Waldo? But they found a way. Apparently, it's going to be him as a time traveler.
Oh, no. You know, ordinarily, I don't think I'd be drawn to a Where's Waldo movie, but you know my fascination with time travel movies. I'll watch even bad time travel movies, so this doesn't bode well for me.
And, you know, I like a lot of Seth Rogen's stuff, so it's like it's got all the right pieces, except the Where's Waldo part is so this is from the tracking board. They apparently got some information on it. I'm going to read the quote here. They're saying that this is, quote, built upon the time traveling element where Waldo accidentally activates a time machine and must find a way to get back to the love of his life, Wilma. He, quote, often appears in colorful, crowded scenes from the past, present, even the future. It's like, wait a minute. They had to put a sentence in pointing out that he appears in colorful, crowded scenes.
Wow.
It's like, are we actually going to get a shot, like a distanced, wide-angle shot of this crowded...
Maybe that's
like,
all it's going to be.
Square
these
in Vatican
big,
City
wide-angle
or something.
Shots, and then slowly zooming in on him.
I can totally see them doing that, and it will be the worst movie ever made in the history of ever.
There's been a lot of bad movies out there.
Well, this next one is another one that all of the names behind it, don't know.
This one's got me scratching my head, too.
Yeah, Sony is working on a follow-up to the 21 Jump Street movie, which is actually pretty good. Channing Tatum, Jonah Hill, and then 22 mm-hmm. Jump Street also was surprisingly good. And so they're going to do a 23 Jump Street. They're also doing a Men in Black follow-up. And the catch is that this is one and the same. It is going to be a 23 Jump Street / Men in Black crossover film.
I don't get this at all.
Yeah. Now, Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill are apparently coming back. They're also listed as producers on the film. Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones are not. Apparently, they know how to make better choices about their film selection. James Bobbin is directing. He also directed The Muppets, which was good. Flight of the Conchords, which was kind of a love-or-hate thing by most people. It was a TV series on HBO. And the upcoming Alice in Wonderland Through the Looking Glass.
Hmm.
So,
I take it back. I was going to say, I don't know how you do a Men in Black movie without Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, but we had a Men in Black movie without Tommy Lee Jones, and that was pretty good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I like Channing Tatum. I like Jonah Hill. I think they did a great job in the 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street, but doing the Men in Black,
I mean, the only thing I can think of is that the Men in Black organization recruits them as the new Men in Black. And instead of a Men in Black movie with Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill, it's a Men in Black movie with their characters from 21 Jump Street as Men in Black, which then basically just makes it 21 Jump Street, but with aliens.
Right.
So it's...
And I don't see them as prime candidates for being recruited.
Well, there's that, too.
You know, I mean, it's a pretty selective process, I think, for the Men in Black.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I did hear about this story last week. It was, made me scratch my head. We'll see where that goes, too.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, why don't you run us through the lightning round here, since we are running a little long.
I'll try to make this quick. Once again, I will go through all of the different items here.
And, I'll only bother you if I have something to say, which will probably be
either interrupt me or stop me at the end, either one. Okay. Arnold Schwarzenegger says he's meeting with Shane Black, who's the director of The Predator. Not The Predator from a long time ago, but The Predator coming out in 2018. More than that, we don't know. The Nook users in the UK, the Nook being the popular ebook reader that's the competitor to the Amazon Kindle, they are learning that they don't really own their ebooks. A lesson the rest of us should take into consideration. The Nook store will no longer sell digital content in the UK, and a lot of people are expecting it'll probably also be that way soon in the United States. And this is why some people, like myself, still buy DVDs, so that we actually physically own this stuff. J.K. Simmons, who played J. Jonah Jameson in the first set of Spider-Man movies, is now defecting over to the DC Comics universe. He will be the new Commissioner Gordon in the upcoming Justice League film.
Oh, cool.
Speaking of DC films, Lou, you'll be happy to know Suicide Squad is not getting an R rating.
Okay.
They're going to stick with their PG-13. Also, in the world of DC films, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was to have been writing, I think directing, and also starring in the Sandman film based on the DC Comics Vertigo character, which has a huge, massive fan following. However, he is leaving the film due to creative differences with both the new writer and the new studio. It used to be with Warner Brothers, and now it is with a Warner Brothers subsidiary, New Line. And apparently they've got some creative differences in where they want to take the character. Joseph Gordon-Levitt wants to keep it closer to Neil Gaiman's vision, and so he has departed.
Hmm.
Fox must really like their upcoming Assassin's Creed film, because they're already planning a sequel.
Okay.
Seems a little premature to me, especially
maybe they
given
have a lot of confidence in their stuff.
They must. Video game movies don't exactly have the best track record, but this is one for which they certainly could build a franchise if the story's strong enough. Sony has moved the release date for the Dark Tower series, I'm sorry, the Dark Tower film, back a month to February 2017. Also, Bad Boys 3 has been moved back to May of 2017. Billy Dee Williams is joining the Dirty Dancing remake. I don't know how we missed that one.
Okay, I didn't know there was a remake coming.
Me either. It's apparently going to be a 3-hour telemovie.
Oh, that's so, why we missed it.
Yeah.
It's not going to be very good. No. Okay.
And finally, The Tick is returning as a new live-action show, though without Patrick Warburton.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And that's it for the lightning round.
Interesting. I didn't stop you too much there. So
no.
We actually had a lightning round. Cool. At the box office this past weekend, number one, no surprise to anybody, I don't think, was Zootopia.
Yay!
Maybe surprised at how much it did. It was $75 million.
Nice.
I think it was the largest animated opening in March.
Okay.
I think it was maybe the largest animated opening total. I can't remember now offhand.
Really?
But yeah, it hit a few records, so they were pretty happy
good.
With the result of that. London Has Fallen, another new movie, came out second at $21.6 million. Deadpool sadly dropped to third. You know, it didn't go to fourth. Like you predicted maybe fourth. But you know,
I was hedging my bet, though.
You were. Yeah. Only went to three. Still made $16 million.
Still not bad for week four.
Not bad for week four of a film.
In March.
Like yep. Yeah. Yep. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, the new comedy out, came at $7.4 million first week. And Gods of Egypt, which I'm surprised is still hanging around the top five, did so with $5.2 million. Sadly, has only made $23 million to date after 2 weeks. Doesn't bode well.
Not impressive.
I don't think we're getting a Gods of Egypt 2 anytime soon.
Yeah, probably not. All right, new releases this week in the theaters. We have 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I know I'm looking forward to. And the critics apparently are liking. I don't
are
have
they?
Rotten
good.
Tomatoes here in front of me, but word on the street is that it's pretty good.
Cool.
Also, The Brothers Grimsby, the new one with Sacha Baron Cohen. I haven't heard much about that, but if you've seen his films in the past, I'm sure you'll already have an idea of whether or not you may like this one. On DVD, you know, I think I failed to point out last week that Community Season 6 is out on DVD now.
Oh, cool.
Yes, this is the final season of Community, the one that was only airing on Yahoo. So a lot of people probably didn't see it the first time around. If you're a Community fan, it's worth picking up. Oh, I see someone editing our show notes here saying that 10 Cloverfield Lane has a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. That is really impressive. So that makes me want to see it all the more. I might have to go
too.
See a matinee this coming week. Brothers Grimsby, apparently 47%. Not really surprising. Also on DVD this week, Grease Live, The Big Short. From Oscar season, it's got an 88%. Brooklyn also up for Oscars, 97%. Carol, another Oscars film, 93%. Those are all the big rated films being released. Also, Sisters, The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2, and Ride Along 2. And
cool.
That's it for the new releases.
Cool. And just for kicks here, I did look up a Zootopia. As well, it's 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, it plummeted.
Yes. And the audience score is still 96%. So that's pretty cool. 99% on 146 ratings. And on the audience score, out of 29,595 ratings, it's still 96%. So
I'd
say it's got the popular vote.
Good. It deserves it.
It does.
It really was that good. All right.
So I think that about wraps it up for this week. Why don't you bring us on out of here?
All right. Well, we would love to hear what you guys out there think about any of the topics we discussed. If you want to tear me apart for the whole Daisy Ridley's Lara Croft, or worse yet, Harrison Ford is Indiana Jones thing, which is not what I'm trying to say there, but I think you get my point. But if you want to comment on any of that, send us an email. OuterRim@randomchatter.com. Send us your thoughts on anything that we discussed in the episode here. We would love to hear from you.
And I want to thank everybody for liking us on Facebook and following us there. We're starting to get some traction over there, which is nice. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. You can also find us on Twitter. We are becoming more active on Twitter nowadays, which is also nice to see interaction with our fans. You can find us at Outer Rim Podcast, and you can find myself at Lou Secchi. That's LouSecki. And Eric, where can they find you?
They can find me at Eric Blythe. That's ERIKBLYTHE. And you can also find the Random Chatter Network itself at randomchatter.com. And Lou, as you said, I'm trying to tweet more often. So I would highly recommend people go out and follow the different feeds. Random Chatter probably is going to be tweeting more than the Outer Rim stuff when it comes to entertainment news. But don't forget Echo Base Podcast as well for the Star Wars related stuff. And you can find Echo Base and Outer Rim and Random Chatter and all of our shows at randomchatter.com. And we've also got the Green Justice, Scarlet Velocity, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files shows. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. back on the air this week. I forgot to mention that earlier. So this is a great time to check out Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files with Jay and Josh. So check all of those out over at randomchatter.com.
And of course, we'd like to have some feedback from you guys. If you want to do us on iTunes, leave a review. Just help people find us, helps our show get ranked up towards the top there. So we encourage you to go do that for us as well. Also, tell your friends about us if you like the show and you know people that are like-minded, the same kind of entertainment you guys are into. Let them know about us. And of course, we do have the show live. We're doing live shows on Tuesdays and Thursday nights starting at 9 o'clock. You can find that at randomchatter.com/live. So until next week, we're signing off and we'll see you guys then.
The Force will be with you always.